Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free. Okay, free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail pro. Show, they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free. Okay, free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation. Black power. Black power, black power, black power, brothers and sisters. You're listening to the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense nightly broadcast. And I am your host, Sister Crystal Muhammad, the national chair of the new Black Panther Party. Tonight, on our Thursday night, we generally have our brother Eugene Townsend with ETC Logistics, but he would not be on, but he'll be back next week. So with that, we are going to play some clips I found of a program that comes on YouTube entitled Pan-African Television, and this broadcast is entitled Good Morning Africa. And on this broadcast, they have a number of panelists as well as a wealth of information. So the clips that I'm going to play are very current. I'm going to play the clip from yesterday as well as the clip from this morning so that we are truly keeping the Pan-African connection. We will hear directly from brothers and sisters on the continent And it appears that the people who host this program are from Ghana. So this is our first time playing this segment, and hopefully we can keep it in rotation. And in fact, I will be reaching out to those who are hosting that broadcast to see how we can get them to actually come on live. But in the meantime, in between time, I'm going to go ahead and play that clip. So take notes, and we're going to hear the clip. Tonight, we'll be hearing clips from Good Morning Africa, Black Power.
Hello there. Good morning to you. Many thanks for joining us. It is Wednesday, the 22nd day of December, 2021. My name is Blessed Manaloma. So sitting in once again for Kwame Usudan. So this is the newspaper review segment of our morning show. Good morning, Africa. We are live from our studios here, number 48, Swanika Street in Abilinkpe. We're also live on Facebook and YouTube at Pan African Television. These are the topics up for discussion. Court allows Zuma to appeal. We took that story from the Daily Graphic. MPs in brawl over e-levy. We'll revisit that topic where, of course, members of parliament, they fought. Yeah, they had a fight. You know, some two nights ago. Food security under threat. We took that story from the inside. And Sosu to amend incompetent motion against IGP. So yes, these are the topics up for this morning's discussion. Like I said, we are live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Pan African Television. Do want to connect with us. Leave your messages. Like and share, and leave your messages, like earlier I said, and I will read all of them for you. So let me, without further ado, introduce my guest for this morning's show. As usual, we have Dr. Robert Kugana Blem. He is a former Member of Parliament for the people of Binduri. Good morning, sir. Many thanks for joining us, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Bless, and nice being with you and my professor. And we are waiting for my nephew. I hope he comes sooner than later. This probably will be the break for Christmas, so I want to use this opportunity to wish my constituency a very graceful Christmas, Christmas of peace, Christmas of understanding, Christmas of harmony. Given the crisis we have in our area, we pray that we will be able to celebrate this Christmas and move into the new year celebrating as always. I wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. We hope today's discussion turns out fruitful. Right. We knew Mr. Mensah Maoto. Yes, I'm saying Mr. because I want to intentionally take the doctor and professor out. We knew him as doctor until a few weeks ago or a few days ago, where he added to his academic laurels, and he is now a professor. Professor Dr. Mensah Maoto. He's a dean of students at UPSC. Yep. And good morning, sir. Welcome to the show. And for the umpteenth time, congratulations again on your latest academic feat. More power to your elbows. And welcome to the show for that matter too.
Thank you. Thank you, Bless, for having me. It's always wonderful coming here on Wednesdays, meeting wonderful colleagues, senior colleagues, who can really espouse the best of national interest. Some of them at the end of the day will polish it a little bit with their partisan ideologies.
All right. That's how I'll get to go here, but we'll be hoping that he'll join us pretty later.
We've missed Dr. Alaji
Purple. It's been a while. Two weeks ago he came back.
Oh, okay.
He came on Wednesday. Came on Thursday.
All right.
I'm hoping Dr. Mazuk joins us pretty shortly, so the set will be complete. But I will start the discussion same way. If he joins us, we'll take it from there. So, to our very first story, and briefly, court allows Zuma to appeal. Yes, so a South African High Court judge allowed former President Jacob Zuma to appeal an order that nullified a decision that he be released early from prison on medical parole. Zuma 79 was jailed for 15 months in July for refusing to testify before a judicial panel that's investigating graft during his 9-year rule. He was freed after serving less than 2 months. On December 15, the High Court in Pretoria found that the decision to release him was unlawful and he should serve out the remainder of his term. Now, on Tuesday, Judge Elias Matujani ruled that a senior court may come to a different conclusion. His illness and advanced age needs compassion, empathy, and humanness, Matujani said. In my view, another court may take this into consideration and find differently. For this reason, leave to appeal is granted to the Supreme Court of Appeal. Zuma's arrest triggered riots in two provinces in which 354 people died. The ruling African National Congress said his incarceration ahead of municipal elections in November may have caused its vote. Support for the party slumped below 50% for the first time since it came to power in 1994, with opposition coalitions securing control of several key towns. I'll start with Professor Dr. Mensa Mauto on this particular topic. I wanted to start with Dr. Kugana Blem, but since I want to reserve the parliament debate for him, so kindly start for us, Dr. Mensa Mauto.
All right, thank you, Blaise, and let me also use this opportunity to wish all the cherished viewers of Pan-African TV a special Merry Christmas and an expected favorable Happy New Year, because it's expected that once the good Lord has been good to us and blessed with another year, it's expected that the good Lord will add a new year where we meet once again and always cherish our meetings and discussions related to national and African issues. Zuma, President Zuma, the former President Zuma, I think this issue has raged on for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
And this has to do with the fact that he was sentenced for contempt of court. That was not even the main issue, but the issue has to do with corruption. And for me, it's a test case for the entire African continent. We all saw what happened in South Africa when he was jailed, and it also gives an indication of the type of democracy we practice in this in our continent, where people see and have faith in names than the law. What is wrong if a former president is put behind bars for contempt? It tells you that we lack education in this continent. You see, if you or the average citizen commits such an offense, nobody will fight for you. Party full soldiers will not assemble in even the police station to fight for you.
Right.
But for a president, a former president, to commit such an offense, when the law takes its course, people do not understand. It tells you that the way and manner we are managing corruption related issues, we need to take a second look at it from the African point of view. Okay, what about the whole issue of about Zuma? It's all about corruption. And sometimes one, you are not really surprised if indeed some of those things happen. The same man, Zuma was sacked by Mbeki. Accusing him of what? Corrupt related activities. Some of his people were involved in bribery scandals. And Mbeki disposed him off. But you see, the almighty ANC, the ruling party, and I'm very happy, it was just a matter of time, that their support and influence will dwindle over time, because they have become so powerful, and sometimes their acts are even more than apartheid, in the sense that whatever, most of the things they've accused their fellow whites, they are even doing worse.
They're doing worse.
And one of the serious calamities you commit against mankind is to defraud mankind of their entitlement, especially through corruption.
Right.
My brother, the slightest amount you steal from the national purse means that you stifle someone in a hinterland from having access to good roads, having access to education, which means you have destroyed the future of such people. And this is the bane of where we are today in terms of Zuma and his court-related issues. And I am so much particular with the court, showing that they don't look at the name, and the fact that there's no immunity for their former president, even after we have handed over. And Africa must be, I mean, charting this path to ensure that indeed, whether you are president or not, let the law take its course. Individuals will face the law, but when it comes to some of the presidents, they will not. Not all the presidents in this country. And maybe that is why Ghana should get there very soon, especially where we cannot catch presidents even after handing over for some time. That immunity is granted. We should take a second look at whether those laws are still relevant in our current dispensation when it comes to our democracy. Our democracy is still vulnerable, and for that matter, we should have a total discussion and then involvement of all stakeholders to see if indeed there will be the need to review some of these clauses in our constitution. So I am not so much perturbed with some of the reasons given that his health related it. Once his contempt, they should see to that whatever sanction is applied, I mean, they ensure that he goes through it, because the private individual would have gone through the same thing.
And the law should be no respecter of person.
Oh, my brother. So it's good. It's good that they are giving a fair hearing to appeal. Okay, and the case itself. I'm interested in the case itself. This is a content, but the case itself, because he was accused of some dealings in a $2 billion arm deal. Okay, it tells you that the case itself has not really taken its course yet.
Right.
So this is just for the contempt. Okay, we are interested in the case, and I hope the court in South Africa will come out with that finality. And it is costing its own party.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm happy, because sometimes in a part of the world, the masses, when they take over power, they think that they can do whatever they want to do with power. And to be frank with you, that is why there are bros in our parliament, because it is new to them to agree on consensus. Are you okay? So I probably will get there and then have a thorough discussions on this.
Right. Yeah. Thank you very much. Let me come to the former member of parliament for the Binduri constituency, Dr. Robert Kugana Bless. What's your take on Zuma's issue?
Well, I would take it from the perspective of being a citizen, being a president, and being given the right to appeal.
Right.
The right to appeal, which he has done, and the courts have ruled in his favor, is very critical. We recall that when he himself voluntarily gave himself up, and went and to prison for 2 years, but because of 2 months rather, but because of health reasons and other, they decided to make him stay at home. Now the right to the appeal is very, very critical, where we think that justice will be served and served well. they could be errors of law, they could be errors of fact, but the right to appeal gives you an opportunity, it gives the court, a higher court for that matter, an opportunity to either affirm the decision or vacate the decision. For me, yes, his sentence was very important for us in Africa, that a president can go to jail for offending the law, particularly plundering the nation's scarce resources. It is unacceptable, and you don't know to what extent a 79-year-old man would want to accumulate wealth for. 79-year-old man plundering your nation recklessly cannot be acceptable. And so for me, we look towards the Court of Appeal in South Africa doing the writing, either correcting errors that were committed or clarifying and making an interpretation of the law. And if he is guilty, he is guilty.
He's guilty, yeah. Right. Well, that was straightforward. All right, thank you very much, Dr. Robert Kuganablem. I'll do some of your Facebook messages pretty shortly, but that would be after we have discussed issues in Parliament. Oh, Ghana's Parliament. Well, like Ella mentioned yesterday, if you saw what happened on 6th day of January, where the Speaker of Parliament had to be, you know, selected, we see what characterized that election. People chewing the ballot papers, some people running with it. Well, something similar, perhaps even worse, played out in Parliament 2 days ago when the controversial electronic levy bill was up, to be passed, you know, whether the fate of it was to be realized. And it was an eyesore. Parliament was reduced to a wrestling ring. For the want of a better word, you'd think instead of members of Parliament, we had wrestlers and boxers over there. Yes, we saw things for ourselves on national television. And people have said that to some extent, this Parliament has not lived up to its expectations. The fact that we need consensus, it has drifted of it in its entirety, and nothing, like there's no glimmer of hope as to whether or not these two parties would come together and do something good for the country. And so let's talk about the e-levy, and let's talk about what transpired in Parliament 2 days ago. People have come to give us various accounts of it, majority leader, minority leader, some members of Parliament, but we saw things for ourselves. You understand? We saw things for ourselves. So let me start with Dr. Robert Kuganablem. He is a former member of Parliament, so who better to start with than you, Doctor?
Thank you. Thank you so much. As you rightly commented, the problems of the 8th Parliament started on this very day, the inauguration day. Because where you have somebody chewing or eating ballots, that is the beginning of the disaster. And after that event, I have read the council, Christian council, saying people were elected to go into Parliament to deliberate but not fight. But the problem is, when you see the beginning, that this Parliament was heading towards disaster, and you never said anything, because it's unbelievable where an elected member of Parliament would choose to eat ballot papers, and yet moral society kept quiet about it. And if you do that, this is where you end. The other critical issue that has led us into this situation is the refusal to accept that this is a hung parliament. This is a hung parliament, and that is clear. When we talk about a hung parliament, we are saying a parliament in which no party has absolute majority. You don't have absolute majority. Your majority may be plus one. But that doesn't give you absolute power to take decisions in a manner that nobody can challenge. And that's why you do not have absolute majority. It is dialogue. It is understanding that, look, we cannot do things our way like we used to do. We have to involve everybody in dialogue. Even it involves sharing of power. You must accept that, hey, we don't have absolute power as we used to have. Therefore, we must share power in a manner that will bring consensus and build the nation Ghana. It is so sad that one person's stance on an issue becomes the law and everybody has to fight to ensure that it is changed. Why is the finance minister sticking on the 1.75? Every citizen has said that this is on the high. Why is it that he cannot reasonably reduce the rate that will be accommodating for everybody? And let me tell you something. I believe that the person who is leading us into this oblivion is a majority leader. We do not have leadership that understands the situation we find ourselves. Majority leader or majority group leader at this point should be somebody who is willing to accommodate others, who is willing in his language to be a unifier, not somebody whose language is full of insinuations, whose language is full of disdain for the minority group. It is unacceptable. You come and you give us a lame excuse that the deputy speaker was going to use the loo. Come on. You can go and tell this story to the Marines. This is not what to say. And if he was going at that critical point of voting to the loo, the minority leader needed to be informed that this is what is happening and he'll be visiting the loo. After all, there is conference, there is dialogue, and they know what will move, where will move from point A to point B in the discussions. And so why was this not made clear that he'll be going to visit the loo? I have never seen that happen. I've never seen that, particularly at the point of voting, when you are the presiding officer, you get up and go to the loo.
I actually heard the majority leader in parliament speak, the Honorable Minister for Parliamentary Affairs, Honorable Osechi Mensah Bunsu. He was talking about the fact that the Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Joseph Osei Owusu, he had to go and take his medication. And he said he was shaking like a leaf, you know, and he said he had some medication, so he had to take his medication. So because of that, he had to leave, and the second deputy come in and take over his position.
And that is why I'm saying this should be told to the Marines. It's the most unwise thing to do. It's the most unwise thing to do. Because at that point, you can call your leadership and let them know. Why is it that it was only the majority leader who knew that this man was going to the loo? Why? There are two leaders. Minority, majority. And so, please, let everybody know so that people will know what is happening. Because you have come to the crunch issue of voting. And you cannot just get up and bow out that every person knows that that was just an excuse, a story that can only be told to the Marines, and what he intended to do was to go and sit down and vote. And that is unacceptable. That is clearly unacceptable. And so for me,
if this parliament will work well, then the majority leader has to begin to understand common principles of group engagement, common principles of working with an opposition group whose duty it is to oppose. The minority is not there to entertain the majority. The minority is there to oppose. And that is their avowed duty, to oppose. So when you are opposing, you have to meet them halfway. You have to meet them so that there is consensus. But you cannot all the time believe that you are majority. And even up to now, at their conference in Kumasi, they were trumpeting the fact that they were majority. You are not majority, for God's sake. You are not majority. And if you continue saying you are majority, this is what you get. It's a hung parliament, and people must appreciate that you do not have absolute majority, and therefore you cannot work effectively, and you do not have absolute control on power. And now, what the minority are representing, they are representing Ghanaians. Every Ghanaian knows that this tax is huge and cannot be implemented at this time. Everybody knows that. And we are saying that there must be, yes, everybody else agreed that the nation would run on taxes and we need money to run. Yes, but we are also saying that reduce your frivolous expenditure. If you reduce your expenditure, you can reduce certain expenses that are unnecessary for this time, such that we can manage with what we have. We cannot continue in this way. And I'm very happy that what happened, and that people will now begin to draw lessons and now begin to know that in a democracy we need to talk. And we can only talk when the other party is willing to listen. We are all for the good of the country. Nobody is voted to go and fight. But if common sense does not prevail, if people who are in leadership do not bring an environment of cooperation, an environment of deliberation, this is what we get. So it is very unfortunate, and if somebody would ever talk to the majority leader, for him to listen more than talk more, and for him to stop this sarcastic way of speaking and speak to issues properly and respect other parliamentarians, things will work well for Ghana. We are in for business, and it is our interest as majority party and as social democratic MPs to support the vulnerable in society. We know that this tax is going to hurt the most vulnerable in our society, and it is our duty to protect them.
Right, but Doctor, let me ask you. We saw how events played out in Parliament 2 nights ago. We saw attempts made by your party, the National Democratic Congress, some members of Parliament, to go for to go snatch the seat, something that had been done a few weeks ago with the same e-levy. Was it the right thing to do? Because that, to me, instigated the whole melee.
Was it the right thing to do when somebody chewed ballot papers? Was it the right thing to do? Was it the right thing to do for the speaker to leave his chair? Was it the right thing for him to do that? Look, come on. We used to say that, oh, when we see people fighting in other parliaments, we say, oh, this is not Ghana. This is this. But it's creeping in slowly into our country. Therefore, we must understand that there's a problem. There's a problem where dialogue fails. This is what you get. There's no right in here. There's no right in here. Is it right for the Speaker of Parliament to take a decision and without consultation you go and overrule that decision? Is it the right thing to do? And count yourself to form a quorum for the purposes of voting? Is it the right thing to do? So there have been a chain of deliberate errors that has led us into this situation. And those errors are unpardonable. They are deliberate. And so if the majority decides to create a situation and sit back and say, hey, why were you going to take the chair? Why are you not doing the right thing? If you fail to do the right thing, this is what you get. People do not just sit down and go to war. They go to war when simple interest is not seen to be followed by others. And so, why? They have voted to protect their people. And there are so many ways of doing that. And so, for me, what fails us is dialogue. And what continues to fail us is the majority leader. Mm. He is not cast. He has enjoyed that kind of absolute power in parliament, so he is not cast in the mood to dialogue, to respect other parliamentarians, and that is the problem we are facing today. He must tolerate others and know that this is a hung parliament that needs very different ideas as we begin to make progress. You cannot run this parliament as you were running the 7th parliament. Not at all. There, you could have the saying that let the minority have its say and the majority its way. No, that is an absolute no in this current dispensation where it is a hung parliament. And the bitter truth is that accept the fact that this is a hung parliament because you do not have absolute majority. And if you accept that fact, we can make progress as a country.
Dr. Albert, you talked about the fact that the first deputy speaker, Joseph Osei-Wusu, leaving his seat was something you shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
And the justification for it, you labeled infantile. You said, you know, he can say that to the Marines. But we saw the Speaker of Parliament leave Parliament as well. We saw Alban Bagbin leave Parliament as well. And some of the MPs said, they didn't even know where he had gone to. So would you agree if somebody says that he leaving Parliament triggered the whole thing? Because perhaps if he were there, some of these things wouldn't have happened.
We don't know for that fact that he left Parliament. What we know is that he wasn't conducting parliamentary business. If he was conducting parliamentary business on the chair and he left, that is a different ballgame. He wasn't. So when responsibility is on you, the first deputy speaker, he had the responsibility to conduct the business at that time. And so he must be faithful to that duty he was executing. He wasn't faithful. He wasn't truthful. And that is what happened. And so we cannot talk about the venerable Bagbin at this point. We cannot talk about him at all. He wasn't conducting business. If you knew that he had left Parliament, why did you start? Why did you start the process? If you want to be counted and vote, why did you start? And so let's not, these childish and infantile stories will not lead us anywhere.
Mm.
It won't lead us anywhere. Bagbin was not on his seat, and therefore he did not leave at that point. Somebody started the meeting, started the voting process, and therefore must continue to its end. You must do that.
Mm.
If not, you can suspend and go and take again, and go and take your medication and come back. You can again.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what about if you go ahead to take your baby, say you don't come back, what happens? And so you cannot just transfer that duty to the second deputy speaker and tell us that you went to take medicine.
Hmm.
Why didn't you suspend sitting?
Right. We'll talk about the issue of whether or not would be legal and for the first deputy speaker to have left a seat and then to go vote, whether or not, you know, with the constitution. We'll find out if that is in tandem with the constitution. I'll find out from you later. But let me come to Professor Dr. Mauto on the brouhaha that transpired in Parliament two nights ago. Your general view, sir.
All right, thank you. Sorry, I mean, please pardon my voice today. I'm struggling. the weather has not been so favorable to me, yeah. It's unfortunate, actually. And I'm not surprised, even though my senior colleague said he's happy.
Mm.
Yeah, he's very happy about what is happening, but I am not happy, but not surprised, because just as he started, this 8th Parliament of the 4th Republic, you know, began on this note, and it has continued with that posture from day one. Whenever there's a critical decision to be made, and it boils down to numbers, then those things will happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't surprised at all. And the posture of both the minority and the majority tells you that there's something missing.
Mm-hmm.
And bless, what is missing? We all know that it, this particular parliament is new to them. The last time we met here, we all agree that, you see, they've never been used to such numbers before. Yes, technically, apart from the independent member who had agreed to do business with the government in power. Okay, it is hanged because it is the same numbers. But once the speaker has come to speak about this issue, so I don't think it's a problem to refer one segment as majority and minority, because in our parliament, the independent MP says that I will do business with the government in power, so there's a majority.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not hanged. However, it tells you that we do not have that absolute majority. And I resonate with Doc, my senior colleague here, that indeed you don't have the absolute majority. Therefore, you cannot have your way the way business was conducted in the past. That is that's the only difference. That is why these two parties will always use some of those fisticuffs to agree on issues, which never ends with any positive and favorable outcome. They've never achieved any good thing. Even if they do, at the end of the day, it casts some slur on the image of parliament. So what is the problem here?
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, Senior mentioned some few issues, especially the first parliament, the first sitting of the 8th parliament, when MPs, who to a large extent represent the law-making, you know, image of this country, so symbolic of one of the organs to ensure that we do not denigrate the gains, okay, denigrate that image through the gains over the years from the first parliament to the 8th parliament. But this particular 8th parliament, to a large extent, I would say that they have denigrated that image. Are you okay? Because it's the first time having such numbers. But the other problem is that you don't have sanctions. None of them have been sanctioned. None. You know, this was a parliament, or this still a parliament, from day one, this is fighting on the floor of parliament. And we expected that the privileges committee would have some privileges measures put in place to ensure that some particular MPs should be sanctioned. Yes, indeed, you mentioned the offense committed by that particular MP who snatched ballot papers. Bless, if it was myself or you, would have been behind bars by now. But this is a lawmaker who should have been sanctioned with even a serious sanction than what the individual should have faced. Because he should know better. In addition to those who are throwing blows in the floor of the house, you see, Bless, I have read through the standing orders of Parliament, and apart from the provisions to establish the Privileges Committee to sit on any case that they adjudicate on, I am yet, probably, Honorable can correct me, to
to read, come across any specific sanctions for people who do not conduct themselves very well in parliament. So you see, but there's a gap in the standing orders of parliament. Do not give powers to a committee to recommend sanctions. But like we have in the judiciary, we know what constitutes misdemeanor, is not true? Mm-hmm. We also know what constitutes criminal offenses. Okay, so when you snatch a ballot paper, because you have the right to formulate laws on your regulations, parliament, it's a constitutional provision. So what is the sanction for the one who snatched the ballot, the one who slapped? In fact, what even happened yesterday was even worse off. That I believe hearing that somebody used razor, and somebody is even nursing multiple cuts. It's just a matter of time that people will start going to parliament with guns and knives. Mm. If somebody is able to go to the floor with razor and they used it to attack another MP. And all this is happening because they commit them and go scot-free. Nothing happens to them. Nothing happens to them. So, slowly, a house that we describe as honorable house, they are making it a dishonorable house.
Right.
What is so honorable about what happened 2 days ago? So, you see, the problem here is the fact that they are new to the numbers they are working with, which requires that they will need consensus, dialoguing, and they are new to it. So, if the last resort is to fight, it tells you that it's a new thing to the Ghanaian, parliament. Now, another gap, that seems to be true. I don't want to dwell so much on this. Another gap I found out in the standing orders has to do with the issue of the speaker. And the presiding, deputies. Are you okay? Once the minority and majority are interpreting their own provisions as to whether if I am a deputy speaker and I'm presiding, whether I have casting vote, it tells you that we do not have a strict provision to that effect. So parliament, as they always say, they should look at the standing orders again. So that indeed, if they meant that, look, the speaker, Article 104, if indeed they want to expand it in the standing orders, that look, if you are presiding, you can vote, then they should go ahead and do that. Because it is still not clear. We've had a number of interpretations. They should sit back and then see how best to address these issues very well. Apart from that, those numbers have exposed a number of gaps in the signed orders of parliament. We are just, once again, it's just a matter of time, but very soon, and I just hope we get there very soon, and we need to prepare towards that, that there will be once upon a time in this country, or some years to come in this country, a government in power will be minority in parliament.
Yes.
And that is where some of those things, and this thing would have happened in 2008. It's happened in 2008. If indeed our current president, His Excellency Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, had won the election in 2008, would have been a minority in parliament. I mean, it was left with the first one was 30,000 votes. Mm-hmm. If he had won, then would have had this situation there. And could you imagine, it's a little more chaotic then.
Mm.
Okay? But you see, as people, how do you solve this problem? That is why today I don't want to dwell so much on the posture of both minorities. We should be looking for solutions. Okay? Now, when my senior colleague was speaking, he spoke about the fact that it's hand parliament, and for that matter, there's a problem. So, to solve the problem, we should be thinking about dialoguing and even power sharing. Doc, let me tell you, one of the opportunities
we missed when was when we had opportunity to start for the minority to have joined Ghanaians in the referendum to elect MCs and DCs. I'm coming back. I know you have your preservation about that. I mean, whether political, I mean, whether it's been a political or non-partisan, partisan or non-partisan, I don't have any issue with that. At the end of the day, we want all-inclusive government participation of all parties, so even if it is political. Then, we know that a particular party, okay, at any given point in time, is actively participatory, are you okay, in the governance of this country. So, the issue of power sharing already exists in the very operations of our operations and management of our communities. When indeed, we all know that there are some areas, if you are to vote for MCEs, there are some parties, whether they are in power or not, they can never win such areas. I don't see how an MPP faithful, okay, will win any seat in majority seat in the voter region. Likewise, the Ashanti region, in the case of NDC. Whether NDC is in power or not, it's not possible. But I see one of the ways to cure is to allow people elect their leaders in the specific areas. So Parliament now distributes resources to those, approve the distribution of resources to those areas for them to govern. So indeed, if we have a hung Parliament and the minority knows that in my area, I need money to develop and my people are in charge, what has numbers got to do with them? So these are things that we should be looking at to forestall anything, because it's just a matter of time that what I am preempting, that one day we are going to have a government that will be a minority in Parliament. Just a matter of time, and that day will come. Now, finally, Bless, you see, I also don't like the posture of both the minority and the majority. The posture is so bad. Minority is of the view that indeed the majority must agree to dialoguing, and this is what you have presented, and they must observe all, comply with all. No, we don't go to the negotiation table like that. Are you okay? Then the majority is also of the view that, I mean, some of them, not all of them, of the view that, oh, we are in power, somebody is trying to stifle our ability to govern, therefore we also use other means to have our way. Bless, once you have such, you take such a picture, then what happened in Parliament is bound to happen. Why am I saying this? Now, the minority presented issues in the budget, and most of them have been addressed, with the exception of e-levy, is not true. Now, my expectation from the minority was the shift of from their initial position, okay, of asking for total withdrawal of the e-levy to reduction in the rate, because professionals have come out, stakeholders have come out, a lot of CSOs have come out. Look, the rate is too high. And I was baffled a bit when I saw the bill, and it was still 1.75. And that's a posture taken by the government, that without the 1.75, we will not make progress in this country. Who said that? And even, I know Doc espoused here is in direct conflict with what his party is doing in Parliament. Doc even mentioned that the Minister of Finance should be looking at how to reduce the rates. How to reduce the rates. And then agree and dialogue with the minority and see how best this can be implemented. Because it's the main government business. I guess you know. Because of this, we are going to continue a journey. We may not even know whether journey will even complete the discussion. Mm-hmm. And it will even delay between 1st journey and 17th journey. Are you okay? It may delay the implementation of this policy. So we are losing income. Already, we are losing income on the road tolls. Because the expectation was that it's going to replace the road tolls, not to, that. So some of this pressure, are you okay, by both parties, is what is what has brought us where we are today. So it is important that you see, as two parties, they have to meet themselves halfway to ensure that indeed you don't have the numbers again. So we need dialogue. Let me tell you, I don't want to go preempt, that's why today I don't want to preempt what people are thinking. So I already go into the conversation of probably preempting what Joe Wise did and then what Aban Babin also did. I don't want to go into that business now. I wasn't there. I'm not privy to anything. Yes, sir. So I will not conjecture at this point in time. However, you see, Bless, where we have gotten to, okay, we all know that the majority are not even sure whether they may even get the votes if this is subjected to voting. No. Because there's some history that when this same parliament, when it was time for the election of a speaker, for one of their own voting against them, the members they have, they should have secured their nominee, the speaker. So the majority has no other alternative than to try as much as possible dialogue with the minority and see to it that this budget is approved to its, I mean, in its entirety, and then ensure that the business of the government will not be stalled by the posture taken by both the minority and majority. So, Bless, where we are now, I don't want to get into the personal issues as I've mentioned earlier, but we should be thinking about how to address the gaps in the standing orders of parliament, and then also see how best to bring back the election of DCs and MCEs to ensure that we have power sharing as part of governance in this country. Not winner take all. Because what we have now is winner take all. Once you are in opposition, look, all you can do, that is why he mentioned that opposition is there to oppose. It's not always the case. Bless, I disagree with senior here. Opposition is not always there to oppose. That is why in the wisdom of the Ghanaian parliament, we don't use opposition, but we use minority and majority. But opposition is to give alternatives. Opposition is to provide alternative solutions. Opposition must be part of governance. Sometimes it's good to go and borrow what others are doing. Are you okay? That's why in South Africa, okay, their governance is also different. Everybody's involved. And we need to get to the stage where elections can be conducted with nobody losing a life. Because, look, Doc, if indeed you know that no matter what, your party will have a role to play in national development, you will not oppose everything.
Right.
No. I just want to lead my point to my crusade. Okay? That when some of these things are implemented, especially election VCs and MCEs, we will get to the stage where these two parties will now agree that manifestos cannot be used in developed countries. I've been leading this crusade. Let's legislate a national development plan which will provide for medium term and long term. Parties must select
what has been provided for in the National Development Plan and then work around it. So look at nice policies like the former president introduced community-based secondary schools. Brilliant ideas. This shouldn't have been an NDC policy. It should have been a national policy by now. Then the current government has brought in what? One district, one factory. Eh? If it was a national policy, then every government who comes in will also ensure that, look, you brought one, I am thinking about two or three or four. So one community, one SHS, maybe the next one say, look, the community is growing. One cannot be enough, so let's get about two or three. What I want to put across is that, you see, these positions have nice ideas, but the nice ideas should have a foundation in our national development plan. Until then, we'll just be developing this country in silos.
Mm.
In silos. You see, I know Doug is not happy because of the fact that indeed the current government, Ayoke, is just trying to complete some of the senior community days, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, when in future, if they are fortunate, if they are also fortunate for Ghanaians to accommodate them again in governance, Ayoke, what it means is that that commitment, dedication towards 1D1F will also dwindle.
Right.
That is if you need the development of our country to manifest those of parties.
Right. Thank you very much, Professor. Bless. I'll come to you. I promise. I'll come to you. Azongo says, we don't have majority in parliament. We are all equal numbers, so no majority. God save Ghanaians. Mazongo from Tamale. Mohammed Abdul Razak Ali says, the second deputy speaker intentionally said he hurt the eyes more than the nose, which was blatantly false because we all followed the proceedings. Ibrahim Boss, good morning to you. Many thanks for doing the watching. Dennis Wyakwete says, blessed, to be honest, even though I hate the proposed monstrous e-levy, and would find my own way to escape it largely, I'm not happy about the theatricals in Parliament on the said e-levy on the part of both our parliamentarians and leadership of Parliament. That said, it is about time that executive that is hinged on hung Parliament knew that the time we are in at the moment calls for consensus building and nothing less. However, disagree that minority's job in parliament is only to oppose. I disagree that minority's job in parliament is only to oppose. The opposition must only relate to wrong policies like the e-levy that would inure to the generality of Ghanaians. Shalom, Dennis. Okay, thank you very much, Dennis. Fuseni Sani Turawa says from, good morning, bless your panelists. Bless, the problem of this NPP government and his MPP parliamentarians are that they are dishonest and they don't respect anyone apart from themselves, and that some of us are disappointed with some of our religious leaders. Okay. Akure Albert Mbawini says the issue of fighting in parliament is very pathetic, but in another look seems good in the face of fairness. This is because there's an absolute hung parliament and MPs under majority side have to deliberate with minority to come to consensus than using unconstitutional means to get things done. Majority is the cause of all these brouhaha in this 8th parliament, and they must put a stop to it, else they won't get it easy in governing the country with such behavior. Anyway, my regards to Honorable Dr. Robert Kugana Bleb. In fact, the good people of Bindui have truly sold their color TV for black and white TV. Okay. Alright, thank you very much. Dominic Lukpo says, you see, all these things are happening as a result of the arrogant nature of the first deputy speaker of parliament from Lukpo, Dominic Nkunya Bumbula. Mohammed Abdul Razak Ali says, I personally think it's now that we are testing the reality of Ghana's democracy. Dominic Lukpo further says that the first deputy speaker of parliament is bent on bringing hardship on Ghanaians. That is why he's behaving the way he is behaving. Ayu Faru from Tamale North, good morning. I salute the minority MPs for being bold in fighting to save Ghanaians from the insensitive E-levy, the E-levy bill, is the laziest way to generate revenue. Prince Simple, hi, good morning, Pan Africa TV. I'm Simple from Ohwe. This MPP are going to bury us before they will go. Dr. Malto, are you saying that what the first Deputy Speaker of Parliament is doing is right? This came from Dominic Lokmo. Mohammed Abdul Razak Ali says, Prof, so far I'm enjoying your contribution. Right, Prof appreciates it. Thank you very much for these messages. Keep them coming. www.facebook.com/Pan African Television. I'll read all of them for you. Doctor, it looks as though the New Patriotic Party is hell-bent on introducing the e-levy, 1.75%. And it also looks as though the National Democratic Congress has taken an entrenched position with regards to the e-levy, that they are going to oppose it in its entirety. They are not going to accept the 1% or whatever. We've seen the fact that we've been talking about consensus building. Let me come to your party, the National Democratic Congress. We saw MPs fight yesterday. They fought. Blows. People were trading blows. I saw the video for myself. Is it the right? I'm asking you again. Is it the right thing to have done?
Let me start with what my good friend Prof talked about. When I mentioned the fact that as opposition party, our duty is to oppose.
Mm-hmm.
When I oppose, I don't just end up saying that, hey, we don't want this, we don't want e-levy. I give alternatives. It is only in opposing that you create opportunity for alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we use the word opposition, doesn't mean that you just say, look, we're not going to be part of this. We've been part of dialogue all the time. But you can only be creative when you see the negative side of an issue. And in seeing the negative, the positives come. He also mentioned the fact that a policy like one district, one factory, he may want to put it on a national development plan and even probably make it two factories per district.
Mm.
You see, economics is not about joking. Mm. National development is not a joke. If it is the one, somebody putting a workshop somewhere and call it a factory, that is not what NDC is thinking about. We are thinking about viable factories, and it's not every district that would have a viable or an environment that can create and sustain a factory. We don't do that.
Mm.
We don't do that. That is wasting the nation's resources without thinking. Every district, every factory. If you go to England, I mean, Adam Smith's era, we have hubs for factories. It's not every place in England that they even though industrialization happened there first. It's not every place, because some factories cannot be situated in some areas. And we are an agrarian economy, so most of our products are farm produce. And so when we say factory in every district, we mean factories. Viable factories. We know what happened when Kwame Nkrumah started this. There were certain places he chose to have factories. There's a rubber plantation here, and the potential for rubber, growing more rubber, is that you locate the rubber plantation there. Like in the north, we had the Palugu tomato processing factory. We had the meat marketing processing in Bova, because we have cattle. And we knew, then government knew that if we have a meat factory here, it will serve us very well. And when we were children, we had this corned beef that was coming from there. And there were even tamarind and the rest, they were processing them there. And so we would not take this as a policy that would send us anywhere. We would put factories where they are viable. No, we put factories where they are viable. We are not going to jump into MPP slogans and then do useless. A vulcanizing shop is not a factory. We mean serious business, and that is what we are going to do. But I agree with him when he talks about the senior. I agree with him totally. That is very critical. We need a lot of these schools because that is human development. And we
Let me interject. Let me interject. You see, maybe you didn't get the import of what I was trying to put across. You see, what I meant was that we need to come together as one people.
Yeah.
And then agree on what will help develop this country.
I agree.
Doc, you agree with me?
Yes.
That the taxpayers' money was used to pursue, the previous agenda.
Yeah.
The policies, turned out by successive governments. Along the line, look at the amount of money. Look, debt has been accumulated for this affordable housing project from what do you call it, President Kufuor's era to date. During Muhammad's era, they went in for debt to come and build affordable houses.
Yeah.
But the continuation. Now, if there was some legislated plan which will now mandate you to ensure you continue, my brother, all these things will not continue.
Yeah, you're taking my time.
No, I'm not taking your time. You see, all I want to put across, you are directly involved. You are closer to government, and I'm privileged to be with you here. So at least we can exchange ideas. Yes, I used one or two scenarios. Are you okay? To illustrate that it's indeed, look, Malaysia, they are not using manifestos to develop their countries. Today you read about Malaysia in a district. There's a national plan that cascades down to what the district is expected. So you are in a district, you know what the budget allocation for that district is. You know the plans that the government has for that district. Are you okay? Now, how many indigenous in our districts know what the government have for them? They don't even know the projects that has been brought in there. These are things that if we have in a national plan, broken down to the last person, the last grassroots person, they use the grassroots for election purposes. But the grassroots should rather be used to educate people on developmental projects so that they will hold them accountable. So the 1D1F, the senior secondary thing, I guess you're not happy that it's not going to continue. This is not true.
Yes, you're not happy. Yes.
In the same vein, because there's no consensus, are you okay, among the various parties, these two parties, tomorrow, when you also come, or if you come tomorrow, what it means is that you abandon that project. But please, will we continue like this? That is all my submission. That look, as two parties that has taken over, you have duopolized the governance in this country. You have no option that to agree to develop this country. But if you don't, if you continue with this trajectory, one day, if there's no third force, what will happen will be more inimical than what some of you be thinking about. Because the Ghanaian is day in, day out being enlightened by what you say on air, by what they read from other countries, and they have the option to choose between good and bad. Therefore, let's look at how to come together and see Ghana as our only country and a project that we have to develop to bring some level of good livelihood to the people. That is what government is about to provide what I need for me. Yes, I will also respect and make sure that I obey with all the rules. The Ghanaian is not so difficult to govern. Because as a Ghanaian, when I have a job, I have respect for my family. Mm-hmm. That's all. We don't need anything. And these are the things that we are asking for. So please, it is good for you to come together. You can disagree, but agree on developmental issues.
We agree. No, his principle that he has espoused is perfect. Yeah. I don't disagree with the principle. Mm. We need to collaborate. No, somebody's saying today, another person's hand tomorrow. And so national development should be said that there is continuation, not where you come and you truncate somebody else's project. But he mentioned the fact that there should be transparency and consensus in some of these projects. But you mentioned the affordable housing that was started by Akufo. Let me tell you that at foundation stage of these affordable houses, they had already shared the buildings. The buildings were already shared. So if the buildings were already shared, what do you expect? Government affordable houses, you foundation level, then you share these buildings. But the schools are there. The government of the NDC wasn't going to own these schools. It was for the government of Ghana. And everybody knows that if the schools are there, it's going to help everybody. It's going to ensure that our children have schools to go. Because of the population growth, we need more space. And because of the fact that we want to reduce cost of traveling for students who have to move from their community to another place, we have these schools so that we reduce the cost of education for the ordinary Ghanaian. And so these are the issues. I agree with the principles he espoused. Mm-hmm. Very good. We need to continue as a country, but we cannot continue as a country when in housing we have a national housing policy, then foundation level you share these buildings. Mm-hmm. And you expect the next government to come and then complete the buildings for you. Mm-hmm. Why do you share buildings at foundation stage? That was the problem with Kufuor's affordable housing.
You see, I don't really want us to go into the menace or the issue of abandoned projects, because it has been an issue of both parties. Mm. The NDC have abandoned projects, the MPP have both abandoned projects. Mm. So it's something I wouldn't want us to go deeply into, because that's not what we are really discussing now. But let's talk about the e-levy as well. What do you think would be an appreciable percentage, something that would be embraced by all and sundry? Because the 1.75% that the MPP is hell-bent on imposing on Ghanaians, of course, everybody has said that it's too Herculean, it's too big. So what in your estimation would be an ideal percentage of the e-levy? The telcos have agreed to reduce their charge by, 25%.
You see, I don't think that it would be useful suggesting a percentage, because you have a finance minister who is so entrenched and he knows everything. He knows everything, and whatever he says must stand. That is the issue. So even if you go and suggest anything, the man is not going to take it. He is the god of economics in Ghana. He knows everything. So that is a problem. We cannot make progress with suggestions. And that is why the NDC has taken the position that if you think that it is your way or the highway, so be it. Let's all go into the highway. The tax is not for you. And you are not the only one going to pay the tax. All Ghanaians are going to pay the tax for the development of Ghana. And the same Ghanaians are telling you that, please, 1.75 is on the killer side. And you're so intelligent. Why?
Is the NDC frustrating government's business on purpose? Is it a unilateral? Is it a decision that the party has taken that look? I'm going to frustrate government.
How do we frustrate government? Nobody's interested in frustrating government. Government is frustrating itself. It is the MPP government that is frustrating itself, because you do what is feasible. You do what the Ghanaians are telling you to do. Ghanaians are telling you reduce your budget, your expenditure. It's just too frivolous. Reduce that expenditure to ensure that we are able to manage with what we have. Reduce that. When the transport minister cancelled the road toll, was it the NDC that told them to cancel it? Well, how could you do that when you need money? They are frustrating, and if they want the one frustrating government, they should go to the road minister. Because that was a time where Ghanaians were paying with minimal discomfort.
and then you go and you cancel it, and you tell us the NDC is frustrating you. Government is looking at ways of bringing in more revenue, not removing an revenue source just like that without any good reason.
Right, doctor. So, would you say that the NDC is fighting the Ghanaians fight? Because, you know, for me, as an ordinary citizen, what I see is that I feel that the NDC, to some extent, feels that I don't want to say that it is the populist tactic they are using, because I feel that the e-levy, largely, the Ghanaian people are against it.
Yes.
They are against them. So we've seen them go the extent of trading blows with other members of parliament. So, and I to some extent feel that they are trying to also make up for the fact that they approved some ministers which the Ghanaian people didn't want them to approve.
No, that's not the case. If you look at it, they are not making up. For if Osei Wusu did not get up from his chair and continued to conduct his business in the laid down procedure of conducting parliamentary business when it comes to voting, what would have happened? They could have won the elections, they could have lost the elections. That is transparency, that is honesty. Follow the law, and if you follow the law, nobody is going to frustrate you. But you cannot want to wash their face upwards and you expect them to sit down and watch you. What is that?
Right. We have listened to the majority leader in parliament's account of the reasons for which the first deputy speaker stood up. We've also heard that, or it's actually been rumored that he actually got up so that he could vote. He himself has come out to say that, look, even if I got up to vote, there's nothing wrong with it.
Uh-huh.
Now we've seen the standing orders of parliament. The legal interpretation of it is what is a matter of debate now, whether or not the first deputy speaker had the right to leave his seat to go and vote. People are saying that he at that material time he was still a member of parliament for the people of Bekwai. So once he does not vote, it means that the people of Bekwai have not been represented.
Yeah. So he can become the referee of the match, and then halfway when he realizes that there's some penalty shootout and then his team will lose, then he goes to where the JC and come and play the penalty. Who accepts this in a modern democracy? If he sits there and without sitting on the chair, you started the voting process, you have to continue to finish it. You cannot play the double hats. You can't play that role. He would have been the first fellow in the history of Ghana who sits as speaker and goes to vote as a member of parliament. I mean, what child is... People who know the law are abusing the law in this manner, and we sit as Ghanaians and watch them. I'm telling you, the problem that we face in this country are people who are supposed to know the law and keep the law. I'm telling you, that is the problem. The legal gymnastics is what is killing Ghana. That's all. If it was a poor person who knows nothing about the law, who was involved in this gymnastics, you have seen the repercussions. You have seen what would have happened. And so we, the ordinary citizens, have to look very well and see how these people who we think are all-knowing are using the same law to wash our face upwards. This is unfair, to say the least. When it comes to you, oh, it's okay. You can do this, you can jump. Start jumping from one chair to another, a member of parliament, and then the next thing you would... Look, I think that to make progress, it is just that almost every citizen is tainted. Every citizen is so politically tainted that we cannot have a group of people who can sit down and say that, look, where this country is going, we have to have a good look at our system of governance.
to see how we can craft something that can really bring development, that can really bring consensus, that can bring proper deliberation for the development of our country.
Mm.
We don't have such citizens again. Everybody is tainted. And so immediately you open your mouth to talk, then we know. And that is it. That is it. If elders, if leaders are so partisan, they come under all shades of, you know, some are preaching in the church, some are preaching this, and at the end of the preaching you see that this fellow, he is not as you held him in high esteem.
Mm.
He is not. He is partisan. And Ghana is sharply divided, NDC, MPP. There's no middle way. There's nobody who has said, who can say that, look, I have worked for Ghana, I've been a public civil servant for several years, now I am a Ghanaian, and I want the good of Ghana. I'm sacrificing for the good of Ghana. No. No. Where the bread is buttered is where that fellow belongs, and that is it. And that is where we have this crisis. There's no leadership.
Right. Thank you very much. We actually have pressed with time, so I'd actually take your final words on the fact that Parliament has been adjourned to January 18 or so, where the, of course, finality will be put to this whole e-levy. I'm sorry we couldn't digest the other topics.
The food
security, and then the social story. But let me take your final words and what your expectations would be when Parliament resumes sitting on the 18th day of January.
Well, Parliament will come back. Whatever happened is they have to come back with new ways of doing things. So they'll come back. The bill will be laid again, and then we'll see the debates that follow.
Mm.
But I think that Christmas being what it is, a period of forgiveness, a period of grace, a period of humility, I believe that the
majority leader,
the majority leader, and then the minister for finance, who you know, is more Christian than the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
He will humble himself and allow reason to prevail. This period should not just be a sleeping period. It should be a period where people are negotiating, where people are talking to opposition, where people are talking to those who matter. And this exercise said that when we come back, we would then do the right thing. And the right thing can only be done through consensus.
Right, right. Thank you very much, Dr. Robert Kugan-Ablem. Professor Dr. Mato had to run. He had very critical issues to attend to, so he had to leave us. But then it's been an enthralling discussion here, same week, with Dr. Robert Kugan-Ablem. Many thanks to Professor Dr. Mato, who joined earlier on the show as well to discuss these issues, particularly the brouhaha that transpired in Parliament some 2 nights ago. Many thanks to you at home too who did the watching. Thank you so much. And the festive season is before coming on the floor to avoid what happened recently in the House, he said. Adding, we further discussed opening channels of communication between the leaders of the two parties, including a possible meeting with the president at a future date. He said at no time was there any discussion specifically about the president requiring my intervention in the impasse on the e-levy. So this is the issue. Gabi Shidako meeting former President John Dramani Mahama, something that has left followers of the National Democratic Congress unenthused, some followers I should say. But I'll take Ms. Elendeku's thought on this particular issue.
Well, the fact that Mr. Gabi Oshidako went to visit Mr. Mahama, and as you said, they had a discussion on all manner of issues, I don't see why anybody should be bothered about it. I mean, the fact that they are on different opposing sides does not mean that they are not friends. I honestly do not know their relationship. But obviously, for him to be granted audience to see Mr. Mahama, then I presume they have been acquainted for years.
Mm.
And nothing stops them from discussing issues that is happening. I mean, we all discuss issues, these issues, when our friends and family visit us. So for me, I do not see what the hula baloo is about. What is wrong if Mr. Shidako went to talk to Mr. Mahama? What is wrong with it? And for the statement Mr. Mahama brought, ex-President Mahama brought, yes, I mean, it's because of the way I believe people reacted when they heard the story that the man had gone to see him. And so we had to, and there was a post on Facebook about one of the NDC Facebook activists sharing what might have happened. That was leading to false information. So I'm sure that is why he also came out stating exactly what has happened. There's nothing wrong if the two of them decide to talk about what is happening in Parliament. Because as it is now, we would have to reach out. We have to get Ghana moving. So even that is one of the ways to reach out and make sure that on the 18th, when the parliamentarians go back to Parliament, the issues are sorted out, and we will not have to go back to the disgraceful events of Tuesday. Any way possible, anyhow possible, we have to take steps and do it. After all, we are all Ghanaians. We have family members. I have family members who are in DC. My auntie, my mother's older sister, was the late Patience Addo, the former Eastern Regional Minister for the Eastern Region under the NDC, ex-President Rawlinson's tenure. She also, I think she was a Deputy Minister for Education too. So I have my maternal, my mother, who was in NDC. I am a full hog elephant, daughter of the elephant. That doesn't mean that when I see my family members who are also NDC, my uncle is a full NDC man. So what's wrong if a high-profile MPP person goes to visit a high-profile NDC person? What is wrong? I really don't get the issue here. We have family, we have friends. The fact that we disagree on issues does not mean that we should be enemies.
Right.
And with the things going on, if we all take entrenched positions, how are we going to move Ghana forward? I think this hung parliament has brought us into a situation where we will all be forced to work together for the good of Ghana.
Mm.
So the sitting government and my party and the government is prepared to listen and dialogue with the opposition. That is what I see. I don't see anything wrong with it. And I believe the opposition too is prepared to talk.
Mm.
So now we have to get to a middle ground so that we can move on.
Right.
That is what I see. I don't see why people are angry about this.
Right. So thank you very much, Ms. Elinda. Let me come to Mr. Lister Wong and Apuku.
First of all that we need to understand is that Ken Ufuriata, the finance minister, has plunged this country into serious chaos, and the remedy for it is not to put so much burden on the taxpayer, but rather to try and gather the mess and make use of it. On e-levy, I don't see any wisdom in the e-levy. As far as I know, if you agree to want to make it look like COVID has affected even a government who will not have anything except what the people have given to it, how much less would it affect society? To the extent that a whole government machinery could come out and use propaganda to describe why they are not able to perform, especially when that government has gotten money within the last almost 5 years, that no government in 8 years has gotten half of that money. No government has gotten half of that money that the Akufo-Addo and Kenny Fureta and Baobia have had within the last almost 5 years. No government. Then this same government comes to the people to want to tax us. And the way of taxing us is almost like an armed robber trying to scale a wall into someone's house to force his way to make money when that money has already been taxed. We have questioned him on several occasions. We are on several platforms. He put out a question as to us telling him how he should get money to fund his whatever expenditure, which expenditure most of them are very fruitless, very useless to the plight of the country, and some of them is in the abyss. In fact, this is a government that has been so lucky, very much lucky, to the extent that your predecessor will leave you funds that had serious monies in them. Just recently when COVID broke, I mean, one of the funds that his predecessor, John Mahama, left for him was the stabilization fund. And he had that to use. Imagine if Akufo-Addo is no more and we had another pandemic. What has he left in the kitty for any predecessor, for any successor for use? So, I mean, sometimes you sit and you ask yourself, what plan did they have? And how were they able to hoodwink people to believe that Akufo-Addo had anything better to offer? Especially when his track record in government has pointed out that, I mean, he had everything, but he has nothing to offer. Everything. He has gotten more than anybody has gotten. Not any government has gotten half in 8 years. Put John Mahama Mills together, they have not gotten half of what Akufo-Addo has accrued within the last 5 years. Half. I'm talking about half. And they have nothing to show. It's not as if they have something substantial to show. It's not as if they have built more roads than the Mahama Mills built. It's not as if they have built more roads than Kufuor built. It's not as if they have built more roads than Rawlings built. Put all the debts that we had in this country together. And when Mahama was leaving, we were at 120.2 billion. I hear people say 122. It's 120.2 billion. And you come and you accrue about 241 or so. Some of them have not even been put to the computation. And yet, these same people come back to us after having done nothing, virtually nothing. You can't, Akufo-Addo cannot account for 10% of the money he has accrued. 10%, it will be a difficult thing for you to account, especially when you have auditors that can audit from day one, his accruals to date. He can't account for 10%. Some of the monies are not in this country. And I believe so. That is how come Belgian government will have to, if you have money in Belgium, they should be happy. Why would they tell you that we will just cancel your account? TV is the only sector that is hyped. It's doing well. Corruption is doing well. To the extent that the auditor general will have 12.8 billion sinking in public pockets. No, private pockets rather. People who are making money. I don't believe that if you have said, you will come back to people to ask them for about 6.9 or so billion as projected figure, when you have almost stolen 12.8 billion. If you are not into TV, you pay people who will steal the monies. If public financial management is at play, you should be worried that Ghanaian's money has ended up in private pockets. Then shamelessly, you will put an e-levy proposal to the people of this country, everyone, including those who are in parliament on the ticket of MPP. Their constituents are waiting for them. And look, most of them will be one-term MPs, and most of them will end their tenure in this year, especially when we are going to campaign against them. You have published that already. You have put us into a certain, you know, quagma. That trying to get out of it is a very difficult task for the Ghanaian. You have collapsed enough of the banks. You have collapsed even our economy, the social economy of this country. It's on their knees. Then the people try to want to let you be aware that, hey, Mr. President, Mr. Minister for Finance, Mr. Vice President, enough is enough. Then you come back to tell us that you will use your numbers. And I heard the president that I was laughing. Virtually saying they have the majority in parliament. Then he's supposed to be a lawyer who should know better. You see, some of these tendencies, when I listen to the president, I feel so ashamed of his profession as a lawyer. I don't know who taught him to be a lawyer in this manner. That you know that the MPP has 137 and you say you have majority. And what is the meaning of majority? Does the MPP have majority? You see, and I think the NDC is not doing well. Because it tells you that there should be a by-election. The president has admitted that Esiama has now decided to be a member of the MPP. Even if you have retracted and apologized. The NDC should make it a big case. That utterance from the president. What has he done in negotiation with Esiama that makes him so proud to say they have the majority? When we know Esiama is there as an independent candidate. And one thing that we have to know, you see, we are people who do not like to tell it as it is. All these things that are playing out in parliament, what brought the fight? Joe Weiss sat in there, Joe Oseusu, he sat in there and said, he counted himself, even when he was presiding, as one of the majority. That's what he said. And that he counted, he said, and I, Oseusu, MP for Bekwai, making it 138. Can you imagine? When their rules, standing order, was against them. To the extent that when you are presiding, you can't count yourself to make a quorum. And he counted himself. So what brought about this brouhaha in parliament? No one seems to want to point the accusing finger on that incompetent first deputy speaker who is almost plunging this nation into chaos. If you don't have a potent parliament, you don't have a democracy. This is a parliamentary democracy that we are practicing. And you see someone who has shown so much recklessness to the point that he is trying to undermine the constitution. And no one seems to be worried about it. The last thing he did, that caused almost a mayhem in the parliament. He said, for those who are for the motion, say aye. Did he say aye? Did he hear him say aye? So why was he going to be amongst of those who said aye, when he had not said aye? And you are not able to point the accusing finger on him. Why are we behaving like strangers and ostriches in this country? So we don't have to be blaming MPP or NDC. We have someone to blame. And that is Joseph Oseusu, MP for Bekwai, who is trying to make the constitution of this country almost like a toilet roll. He doesn't even have respect for the people of this country. He doesn't respect the constitution. He doesn't respect law. And he doesn't respect anybody. And he is doing things at his own will and whims and caprices. Now, on the issue of John Mahama meeting Gabi Asaro-Tedako, in the first place, I had a question to ask. And that question was to know, in what capacity did Gabi Asaro-Tedako visit President Mahama? Friends don't do to discuss matters like governance. They don't, please. What's wrong? Unless you're a member, unless you're a member of the government, I do discussions with President Mahama. But President Mahama has not, you know, put it in public like he has done with Gabi Asaro-Tedako. You understand? Over the years, Ghanaians have had a certain belief that Gabi Asaro-Tedako is almost a de facto president also. They call him prime minister in some cases. And this underpins what we discussed in the past as a nepotistic government. That aside, I don't have a problem with their meeting. And I'll put it out publicly, not having any issue whatsoever, apart from this question I asked. In what capacity did he meet him? Now, if he met him as a friend, fine. I don't have a problem with it. But the problem I have with the critics of John Mahama, who don't see the positive, especially when Gabi has exposed himself as being a de facto president or a prime minister, especially when Gabi has told the world that now he has a stake to have to go to John Mahama with Akufo-Addo's warriors to discuss issues about governance, issues about, I mean, if you're not a member of a government, you don't discuss governance. You don't. So to that extent, I rather would want those critics of John Mahama to see it in this way. One, Gabi has now told the world that Akufo-Addo has no idea anymore and John Mahama has got ideas. He has now seen the competence in John Mahama. That is the only reason why Gabi Osorio-Dakwo, the cousin to Akufo-Addo, will walk to the one that has competence and capabilities and potency of ideas. Because that notwithstanding, let's find out one thing. You see, it's a drama of a paradox. In one breath, that man is incompetent. Everyone, just recently, I heard Bawumia in Kumasi discussing Mahama as almost a good for the garbage being. He's only good for the garbage. Then you send, because of you know, some rudeness or arrogance and all that, you send Gabi to go to seek for how he's able to talk to the minority or whatever. Now, that man, John Mahama, if you put his achievements with that money he had in his hands, apart with Akufo-Addo, you see that the heights of both will tell who has performed better. So, going to him is to solicit for ideas, especially when they have stolen almost everything that belongs to the state. I use my words carefully because I know those are the best words that fit them, because you can have 477 billion and perform this abysmal and come back to the Ghanaian and tell him you have nothing in your coffers. You don't. So to that extent, Gabi's visit to John Mahama is rather telling the Ghanaian that Akufo-Addo has short ideas. He has no more any idea. And so let's go to the competent one, the one who has got the prowess in governance, the one who has got the magic wand, who can tell us of how we can get out of this quagmire that we, it's a self-inflicted quagmire, so that in the end we are able to do what the Ghanaian will be attracted to. Last but not the least, what I expect of John Mahama is to put out there that e-levy is a no, no, no. I want to hear his idea on e-levy. I want to know what he says about e-levy so that it will not appear as though he doesn't have a voice when it's about e-levy. He has to put out clearly what his stance on e-levy is. As for whatever the minority have done in parliament, they stand to be praised. They have not been selfish. I mean, the e-levy, if you came out to say if they are not accepting or if they have rejected the budget, they will not be paid, and they still stood firm and said they don't even care if they are not paid, and they did all that they have done, they stand to be praised. Meanwhile, what I think the MPP should reflect, especially knowing that 2024 is just around the corner, their constituents, those poor taxpayers who have been paying tax out of their mobile money vendoring on the street in their constituency, e-levy is going to collapse their jobs. E-levy is going to make sure they become impoverished. So that if you think about how a capitalist government is supposed to behave, is rather building businesses and not collapsing business, you have to sit quietly, soberly, reflect, and know that there is no wisdom whatsoever in the E11.
Mm.
I'm grateful.
Right. Thank you very much. Very interesting submission there from Mr. Lester Wonanapuku, who is the Executive Secretary for Good Governance Advocacy Group Ghana, GGGG. Right, let me come to Mr. Pratt.
Well, I think the most important thing is that Mr. Gabby Ochodaku did not go to former President Mahama's house to discuss how to cook donuts. He did not go there, you know, to discuss, you know, the organization of a Christmas party and so on. He went there, apparently, to discuss government business. And this immediately raises the question of capacity. Who is Mr. Ochodaku? He's not a member of government. He's not even a district chief executive. He is not a member of the executive of the party. He's not even a constituency police station chairman of the party. So immediately the question it raises is capacity. In what capacity did he go to see the former president? I need to believe that there are persons who have no formal commitments, who have no position, and yet who do government business. And if that is the case, how does that sit with the Constitution? How does that sit with the law? And how do we see that in the light of all the allegations which have been made about how government is run today? And for me, this is a very serious matter. Okay. Now, even if you assume that he had the mandate of the president, we don't know that yet. Even if you assume that he had the mandate of the president, the question then arises as to why him? Why can't the president talk to the former president? Why does he have to go through emissaries and so on? At the very worst, one would expect that the sitting vice president may be the person. That's at the worst, you know, to engage in this. Now, coming from where I sit, it appears to me, and again I'm choosing my words very carefully, that we have so destroyed the cordial relations which should have existed. Why have we so destroyed the cordial relations which have existed? In the past, we are told that there were meetings between the incoming president and the president. From all that we know, none of the agreements reached were honored. And in fact, some of the agreements reached in meetings were used as propaganda tools against the former president. For example, the issue about what he wanted to say and so on. These were agreements which allegedly had been reached meeting in the Santini's palace. Look at how he and so on. If you take the sitting vice president, I'm wondering how he can ever in his life approach the former president to have any meaningful discussion. Given the jibes he has been throwing at him, making fun of him, you know, and so on, and any opportunity he gets, he has to go for the devil, and so on. That kind of attitude is not useful for governance in the situation we find ourselves in today. We have a majority in parliament, a minority in parliament, 137 versus 137. Calls for dialogue, it calls for mutual respect, and so on. That does not appear, you know, to exist. Now, in any case, reading all the newspapers and so on, it appears that the purpose of the visit was to solicit the help of the former president in prevailing upon members of parliament of the NDC to pass the E-levy. Is that how you conduct business? Very strange. Is that how you conduct... I would have thought that the strength of the argument and so on is what should carry the day, and not, you know, the use of these personal influences and so on. But, hey, be that as it may, after what has happened in Parliament, is meaningful dialogue possible today? It is not. It's gone to the extent of people actually exchanging blows, people getting their clothes torn, you know, insults and so on. I mean, the Speaker of Parliament, did you read the kinds of things which were written about him and posted on the social media? Mm. Even drawing his wife into it, the wife stumbling into it and so on. How do you do this? And then after doing all of this, come and say that, look, let's sit down and have dialogue. Dialogue for what? And so on. I'm very deeply convinced, and I'm very, very deeply convinced that we've now come to a point in our history where dialogue, consensus building and so on is an imperative. Without that, we can't move forward. It's impossible to move forward. Now, if you look at what has happened in Parliament, it should tell you that we are heading for chaos. Listen, the Minister for Energy, the last time, just after surgery in Dubai, he was flown down, he came to Parliament in clutches, or on clutches, actually being held into Parliament House. There's a woman, Honourable Member of Parliament, who, according to the story I've heard, had just delivered. She came into this jurisdiction leaving a one-week-old baby where she delivered. One-week-old baby. I mean, how callous can we be? And if you talk to all the pediatricians and so on, they tell you that newly born babies have to have exclusive breastfeeding for at least 1 year. It has health implications and so on. Because we want to get a vote, we ignore the health of a one-week-old baby. Drag this woman to Parliament to come and vote. The doctor said that she could be in Parliament for 1 week. It's past 1 week. We're in the second week. She's still here. I mean, what is this? It is not possible to play the numbers game. You can't play the numbers game forever. So at some point, we have to play some other game. Of course, if you talk about the issue of bad blood, it has a history. I recall that the NDC government at some point wanted to have what they called the Sente consensus. And there were leading members of the New Patriotic Party who felt that it was a good idea and actually wanted to participate. Their party warned them that there would be consequences if they participated. They withdrew at the last minute. Now, having conducted yourself in this manner, how do you now use the same mechanism that you rejected? That's another issue, you know, and so on. I'm very deeply worried about the state of affairs. You know, this morning, one of the people I really respect, and I came to respect Mr. Kwame Pienaar a lot, because we were in the same prison. I was in the same prison for him for some time, spent about 6 months with him in prison. And it was in prison that I saw his leadership quality. He organized and found prison farm, you know, and did many things that I won't talk about here. Organized a choir for the prison and so on. And he was an excellent person. He's one person who also has been a very strong pillar in the New Patriotic Party. A lot of people don't know how the New Patriotic Party was built. I was directly involved. Akutuampa and I inaugurated the first Banquet Bizier Club at the KU Methodist Park in Kumasi. Akutuampa and I. Professor Dubuayin and I inaugurated the second Banquet Bizier Club in Kufuruga and so on. So I know what I'm talking about. Mr. Kwame Pienaar was most instrumental in the formation of the party and its funding. In fact, the first headquarters of the party at Kokomimbi was funded by people like Mr. Kwan Pien and so on. He's a very loyal member of the New Patriotic Party. Now, listen to what he says today about the state of the economy. And this is a story which is published on the front page of the Insight, which I just read. It says, Mr. Kwame Pieni, an economist and leading member of the ruling New Patriotic Party, has heavily descended on Finance Minister Kenneth Orata, accusing him of mismanaging the country's fiscal space. According to the NPP stalwart, the finance minister's indulgence in excessive borrowing is destroying the country's economy and leading to high public debt. He said it is worrying that the Akufo-Addo administration is currently borrowing as though there was no tomorrow. Mr. Pieni, in an interview with a card-based TV 3 yesterday, on the minister's performance in terms of the management of the economy, said, no, he hasn't done a good job. He's overborrowing. We are not getting value for money. He said COVID-19 should have taught us that we should cut our coat according to our cloth. There is no Father Christmas. But that is not what is happening. This government is borrowing as if there is no end. Somebody has to pay for it. If you take a bond, I'm not going to pay for it. My grandchildren are going to pay for it, he added. Ufurata, and this is in quotation, Ufurata needs to realize that he's not just a budget and expenditure minister. He's Minister of Finance, and so on and so on. Now, these are the views of Mr. Kwame Pieni. Elsewhere, I've read that Mr. Kwame Pieni is complaining that he's actually made several calls to Honorable Kenneth Orata, and that he doesn't even pick his calls. Now, if you cannot talk to your own leading members of your party, how do you talk to the opposition? If you cannot talk to somebody like Mr. Kwame Pieni, how do you talk to the opposition? So all these talk about consensus building, all these talks about constructive engagement and so on, where is it? When we are refusing to talk to somebody like Mr. Kwame Pieni, that is assuming that Mr. Kwame Pieni is right. Of course, I have no reason to believe that he's not right. I've known him as a very honest person. You understand? I've dealt with him for many years. I've dealt with Mr. Kwame Pieni for many years. And I know that he speaks his mind. I know that he's an honest person. So if you're not talking to Mr. Kwame Pieni, who are you going to talk to? Sir Pepe? If you're not talking to Kwame Pieni, are you going to be talking to Haruna Idrisu and so on? So there's a real problem. Now, my brother, let's look at the facts, the real facts. There is no doubt today, no doubt, and I've said this many times over, it's becoming actually a cliche, that if you take total national revenue, you are spending 128% of total national revenue on two line items, debt servicing and public sector emoluments. That's a collapsed economy. The economy has collapsed. We can't build gutter if you don't borrow. The other was saying that you can't even buy petrol into the president's car if you don't borrow. That's a collapsed economy. You understand? 128% of total national revenue being expended on two line items. That's a disaster, complete disaster. We've run the economy aground. And today in one of the other newspapers, this is a newspaper which is owned and I suspect edited by Albert Dufour, who is from the Atinka Media, you know. No, there's another one. This is a daily analyst. There's another one, business analyst.
Talks about the depreciation of the city.
Talks about the depreciation of the city, the levels of the depreciation of the city. Clearly unprecedented, and so on. You understand? So, this is where we are, and I'm worried. This is where we are. And keep borrowing, and we're going to borrow a lot more. Forget the issue of electoral promises. I don't want to go there. You understand? I don't want to go there. Because if you go there, I mean, what does it mean? Yeah, they promised not to borrow, they promised not to raise taxes and so on. That's it. We are in the hole. How do we get out of the hole? That's my main focus. You understand? So I don't want to do that kind of politics where you go back and say, well, 4 years ago, Vice President Bawumia said this. What is he doing today? And so he said that. Today, the whole country, we are NPP, NDC, CPP, or whatever, we are all in the hole together.
Mm.
We will sink. We will be buried in that deep hole if we don't find a solution out of that hole. So the focus ought to be on how to get out of this huge, widening and deepening hole that we find ourselves in. You understand? And I believe that I believe that the way out is to try and attempt to build some kind of national consensus. I've done my part. You understand? If I tell you some of the things that I've done within the last 3 months, quite apart from advocating the national consensus on platforms like this, my friends, you know, and I have many friends in government and in opposition, you know, I've urged them in private conversations and so on, kick the arrogance, you know, to kick out the Kalambani attitude, you know, and find ways of sitting down to talk. I've told them. And one of the ministers that I saw 2 weeks ago, you know, and I told him, I said, my friend, what are you doing? What are you doing? You want to collapse this country on us? Get out of this attitude. Understand? Reach out to the other side and begin to talk. This country is collapsing on our heads. Last week, I did a very simple exercise. And my brother, look, it hit me in the face. The extent of degradation hit me in the face. All you have to do is to take prices as of 2016 and compare them to prices today. You will collapse. If you take, for example, a bag of maize, it has more than quadrupled in this short period. Any item you take. Now, that must be the clearest indication. We are seeing these astronomical rises in prices and so on. We are being told that we are doing very well with managing inflation. What is inflation? Inflation simply is the rate at which prices are rising or falling. That is the only definition of inflation. Whether you're a PhD holder, an O-level student and so on, this can only be your definition of inflation. Now, if that is the definition of inflation, how can prices be quadrupling, and we are talking about inflation at 12.7%? How is that possible? Does it make sense? Does it make economic sense? You know, but maybe we have to be careful, because I recall that in 1986, when I spoke like this, I ended up in prison in 1986. You understand? I mean, 1986, I raised issues about the figures and how the figures don't match the reality. Because we are being told the same stories in 1986. Same stories, same cock and bull stories. Those are the same stories we are being told. We are being told that the economic development program was doing very well, the structural adjustment program had brought benefits to us and so on. When indeed the economy was collapsing on our heads. You know, and look, I am very, very deeply worried, very extremely.